welcome to If You've Come This Far, the podcast that Sean and I do, where we talk to people who, I pick different adjectives every time, who are smart, who are doing good things in the world. That sums up this next guest, Jed Diamond. This dude has been doing, come on, why are you laughing?
This dude, every time we do an intro, whether it's me or you, it's like, this is a podcast. We don't even know what it's about.
No, we do know what it's about.
We don't.
Wait, you remember Seinfeld, right? Seinfeld was a show about nothing.
Right. Yeah.
Ours
is about something.
It is about something, but it doesn't have to. We don't have to. I don't know. We should employ Lisa to work on that.
Right.
I know my daughter wants to help us with that. But in any case, what I just said is true. And, you know, sometimes we get young whippersnappers in here who are amazing. And every so often we get sort of these legends of their field. And I think Jed Diamond is sort of a legend in men's work by any metric. So what you've known Jed for much longer than me. Tell us about this.
Yeah, Dr. Jed Diamond, my friend, Dr. Jed Diamond. So two things I just want to. So, there's a lot. If you're listening to this, this is July 19th, 2024. And there's a lot of conversation these days about age and, how. What can older people do? Jed Diamond could do whatever he wants. I mean, he could do whatever he puts his mind to at 80 years old. Prolific writer, therapist, built organizations that have served men for over 50 years and not stopping. I mean, and that's what we talk about in the conversation. We, his perspectives, I think, on what make the world better by working with men are just really powerful. And I've been drawn to him since we first started connecting well over a year ago. And I don't think anybody can lose in listening to him talk. Though I do mention how he's been a problem in my marriage, but you'll have to listen to hear about that one.
Yeah, you'll have to listen. And I'm sure you'll get that worked out. Here's the thing that I hope people who may not know Jed yet will even hear in the conversation we have with him is that I feel like so many authors, so many therapists feel like they can't be vulnerable. And this guy is so like authentic and vulnerable and honest. And just in the way he acknowledges that things are hard, right? Like life is hard. Marriage is hard. Midlife is hard. Menopause is hard. Male menopause is hard. So anyway, I think it's really refreshing. And to know that we're not in this alone.
Yeah, no, we love talking to Jed. I love working with Jed. We're working on some programs together, which we talk about in the interview. I think people will really love him as well.
Yeah. He'll be back on for sure because we continue to work closely with him. And as you pointed out, also, he's in every one of your weekly Men Living newsletters.
That is correct.
He has so much goodness to share. Anything else?
No. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you.
Yeah. Always.
All right, let's hear from Jed.
Here we go. Jed's just going to leave up his picture the whole time.
He's a handsome man.
Now you see the real guy.
Chris.
Hey, Chris. Good to meet you.
Great to meet you, Jed. Happy to have you here.
Great.
This has been a long time coming. So I was going to, I'd like to say Jed get up early for this because it's 7:30 in California. But the reality is Jed's up at like 4:30. He's my kindred spirit.
Well, yeah, if that's true, Jed, what time are you going to bed? I got to know.
I go to bed at 10 o'clock.
Wow. You've got like that Bill Clinton used to be legendary for this, right? Like the guy could survive on like 4 hours of sleep a night. Not me.
I got to have seven. I mean, I get 7 hours every night.
I shoot for six and a half, seven.
Yeah. I say I like to get up before consensus reality wakes up and the airwaves are clearer when consensus reality is still asleep.
Well, this has been a long time coming. I feel like, you and I have been conversing regularly for a while now.
Yeah.
But to have you on the show, I think we dabbled in trying to do this a while ago, and now you're here, and we're really excited about it.
Now, just to remind me, we're obviously on video now. Do you do video podcasts, or is it just audio?
You're looking at us, right?
So, I am looking at you.
So, think it would help our cause if we put these faces on out in the public? No,
absolutely.
Yeah. So no, we do. We just post audio.
Okay.
Yeah, we just, like you, we have a big backlog of video interviews, but.
Well, we ought to, consider, because I'm a believer in people like to meet the people, and the more people connect with who we are, and part of that's visual, obviously.
I have noticed this trend. I do see more and more podcasts publishing their video. And of course, my stance has always been that podcasts have such a great reach because people can listen to them while they're in their car. They don't have to be in front of a screen, but you can still do that even if you make the video available. So right. Sean, maybe something for us to consider. Let me get in shape first. Okay. Let me lose a little weight.
All right. We have Jed here. We have so many places that we want to go. I think the first place that we'll start is, if you've come this far as a Men Living podcast, if you will, and the Men Living organization has a vision for a world of healthy, intentional, connected men. And I think this man, our guest, has been working on a vision somewhat like that for 50 years, maybe more.
Yeah.
And so maybe start kind of giving the listeners some perspective on how you started getting interested in the welfare of men.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a pretty wide opening.
It is a wide opening. So let me tell you a little story about, I hadn't planned to do this, but since you asked it in this way, I'll tell you a story. So I picture a little kid. Not the guy I am now, but a little kid, maybe 3 years old, 4 years old. And my mother is telling me it's time to go and get my first pair of big boy shoes. And, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, kids when they were little kids, little babies, they had these little white shoes. Mm-hmm. Everybody had these little white booties. And so we were going to go to the shoe store, and I was so excited. And we went to the shoe store, and I was just entranced. I looked around and saw all of these different shoes and different colors. And then I found the ones I wanted. Ooh. And I was jumping up and down. I had found a pair of red Keds. Yeah, I don't know if you know about Keds, but Keds were the thing. And so I was excited, and the salesman sat me down, measured my little feet, and went in the back room to bring out, and I just couldn't wait. And he opened up the box, and they were blue; they were not red. And he just blithely went on and said, "Well, blue is for boys, red is for girls, and we wouldn't want our little boy to get off on the wrong foot, so to speak." And he kind of turned to my mother And I was almost in tears. And my mother looked at me and looked at him, and she said, get the boy what he's asking for. And so he kind of was chagrined, went back and came out with my red Keds. And I danced out of the store. And it was the first time that one I knew or had come to terms with the reality that gender and sex differences came in different colors and different sizes. And I was very interested, number one, in how is that true? Why can't I, who love this red Keds, get red Keds? Because I'm a boy. And I also was my first kind of jaunt into gender-specific healing, because I was really interested in what things really were different between males and females. Because even as a three-year-old, I suspected there were some differences that were real, but it didn't have to do with the color of shoes. So that's my little story about how I got started. And then, as you know, I grew up, I went to college, I got a degree, I started writing books, and just really wanted to understand. And then the real beginning came when I held my first child in my arms shortly mm-hmm. after his birth. And that was November 21st, 1969. And I give this little story. I say that there's 2 days that really are the most important days of our lives. The first is the day you were born, and the second is the day you found out why. And I was born December 21st, 1943, but the day I found out why was on November 21st, 1969. And I made a vow to this newborn that I would be a different kind of father than my father was able to be for me, and to do everything I could to create a world where men were fully embodied, embraced in their lives, fully healed, and fully involved with their families. So I've been doing that ever since.
Yeah. How many children do you have?
Now my wife and I have 6 grown children, 17 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren.
Yeah. Come on. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So he's a busy guy. So Jed, the comment about being a different dad than what you than your dad was for you, what did that mean? How were you going to be different than your dad?
Well, part of my early story was that when I was 5 years old, so I had my red kids by then, but I was still a little kid. By the time I was 5 years old, one day I came home from playing with my friends, and I was told my father was in the hospital. And it was very vague exactly why he was in the hospital, but gradually what came out over some months and eventually years, really, because things were hush-hush about this kind of thing, turned out he had taken an overdose of sleeping pills. Midlife father, you know, just getting into his 40s. And he was not able to make a living at the time doing the work that he loved. In fact, he was blacklisted as a writer in Hollywood back in those days. And he felt life was not worth living if he couldn't support his family. And I was the family that had come into the world. So that was the promise I made to my son, and later my daughter, and then the children that have come after, that I would be a different kind of father, which meant for me being able to come to grips with the reality of what happened to my father, my own fear and my mother's fear, quite frankly, that I would follow in his footsteps and that would happen to me because I was male, and that I would do everything I could to keep other families from experiencing the pain and suffering that we went through as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I know about your dad that he suffered from some mental illness. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you ever imagine how your dad would have, how his life would have been different if it had been now and he had had groups like Men Alive and Men Living?
Absolutely. I mean, that was my whole life, was growing up as I became more involved in health and realizing what was not available at the time, in 1949. So that's how far back that is. And the hospital he was in was Camarillo State Mental Hospital, north of Los Angeles. And just in contemporary lore, that mental hospital was reputed to be the place where Hotel California, place where you can check out, but you can never leave. Mm-hmm. Those words were reputed to be about that kind of hospital. So absolutely, you know, programs like what you all are doing, what we're doing at Men Alive, you know, is, you know, just so poignant to me, because now a whole lot of suffering and pain. And my father was one of the lucky ones. We all know that the successful suicide rate for males is 4 to 17 times higher than it is for females. I mean, four times. We hear that metric of four times more likely to die from suicide if you're male than female. But what we don't hear the rest of the story, which is those numbers are much higher as we get older, into midlife and older. Mm-hmm.
I want to come back to his family, Chris, just for you real quick. Jed has twin grandsons who played for the Patriots, by the way, just to add to that. They're not playing anymore though, right?
Well, they just, the story is, you know, I still have pictures, you can't see them on my wall, of when they were born, these two, you know, babies. They, you know, my son, you know, called me out when the blessed event is here, and got there shortly after they were born. And there's a picture of me holding these two, you know, little babies in each hand. And they grew up, they were all into sports growing up. My son was very into sports, and they went to college, became football guys. One was at the time a quarterback, the other was a wide receiver. And by the time they got into the college draft, they were drafted out of college by the New England Patriots. First twins that had, I think, been drafted by the Patriots.
Jeez.
And they played, got Super Bowl rings. And since then, they have gotten traded to not every team in the NFL, but quite a few. they're still hanging in there. They're kind of at the end of their career, but they're still playing football, and they're still hoping to get a few more years in before they retire.
Well, so that's classic Sean Emerson right there. He's like, I want to bring it back to Jed's family. But really what he was doing was bringing it back to New England sports. And for the record, your grandsons are better off not being with the Patriots these days anyway.
They had their perfect time to be there and their perfect time to leave.
Yeah. So I want to come back to business. I mean, one of the things that Jed has done in his career and remarkable career is you're a prolific writer. I mean, you've written 17 books, and you can tell the listeners about kind of how you structured those books. I think a lot of them really kind of, you maybe were going through something, or you saw something that was important to you and you wrote a book.
Exactly.
We're going to talk about one of those books in particular in a minute, but maybe just tell the listeners a little bit about how you went, how you approached your writing, and why you felt it was an important part of who you were and what you did.
Absolutely. Well, if anybody has read any of my books, you know, they're very personal. I really do write initially for myself to sort out kind of my own shit and what's going on in my life, and keep me alive, keep me somewhat sane. And secondarily, you know, as I've been a therapist now for, you know, 50 plus years, and maybe a therapist in training from the time I was five, I write books because I see in my life other people that are going through some of what I've been going through. And so I write books for them. And as you say, I've written 17 books. I shared with you that there are probably 12 books that I felt were kind of the most relevant, and you know, they follow my story. But the first one was Inside Out, Becoming My Own Man, that I started writing in 1980. It came out in 1983, and it really was a threesome. They're a kind of threesome groups of books. So Inside Out, Becoming My Own Man was the first of the threesome. The Warrior's Journey Home, Healing Men, Healing the Planet. And, you know, as we'll talk about more, 12 Rules for Good Men were that threesome. And they really kind of captured, I think, the essence of some of the basic foundational things about what men need. So that was that group. And then there was another group, which again, we'll get into, had to do with midlife. So, you know, midlife father now, you know, it's hard to believe, but all my children, six children, they're all in midlife. So they're all going through, you know, the midlife things. So, you know, it started with male menopause, which, you know, we'll talk more about. There was a second book called The Whole Man Program. That looked at males over 40s and how they could be more healthy and healed. And then the Enlightened Marriage Relationship book for the five, you know, challenges and the five stages of relationship and why the best is still to come. So that was that group. And then there was a group that built on some of those earlier ones and dealt with feelings and particularly male anger and depression. Mm-hmm. That was such a core part of my father's life. So the irritable male syndrome, understanding and managing the four key causes of depression and aggression. Mr. Mean, which was, you know, a relationship. How do you deal with, you know, irritable male syndrome and get out of that angry Mr. Mean kind of energy? And then one that was the basis for my PhD dissertation, which is called Male versus Female Depression. Why men act out and women act in. And then finally, I wrote three books that have to do with core relationships. So one was called Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. And the second was Stress Relief for Men, because we all have stress in our lives. And then Long Live Men, which has our Moonshot for Mankind, which you know about, which is really our call to action for men's organizations from all over the world to join resources and be able to work together for healing men and healing our relationships and healing the planet.
Hey, listeners, if you enjoy our show, please consider following us or sharing the show with a friend. And I want to take a quick second to shout out our sponsor, Half Acre Beer Company, from their iconic Daisy Cutter Pale Ale to the refreshing Bodum IPA. All of the beers that these guys are making are a testament to quality and to their passion for brewing. So cheers to Half Acre Beer Company for supporting if you've come this far and for brewing great beers. And now let's get back to the show. Jed, you started Menalive in what year? Was it 69 or was it? Or?
Well, that was when my son was born. I had the concept of it. Our daughter, Angela, was born in 1972. And kind of together, you know, once you have a son and a daughter, if not everybody does, obviously, but if you have raised any small children, it's the realization that males and females are different. And they're alike in many ways, of course. But Menalive, it was birthed after my daughter. So 1972 was really the beginning of Menalive as a concept and then a website. And then it's really my, you know, I call it my window to the world.
So that the math is easy for me because Menalive is 2 years younger than me. So it's 52. Here's where I'm going with this. Like, so you spent at least these 52 years running an organization to help men, being a therapist to men and women, it sounds like. Where did you get support for the last 52 years? Are you a consumer of therapy? Were you getting it just by like the 12-step, you know, giving and supporting others? Or tell me about like where you get help.
Okay, well, the beginning for me, I mean, in some way, I stumbled in help by helping others, which mm-hmm. is not a great way to really give help and get help. That's why if, you know, you go to my website, I know you guys have menalive.com, you see my introductory video that says Confessions of a Twice Divorced Marriage Counselor, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, a short little summary of the intro to all the things I screwed up, mostly relationship-wise with my life, until there was a change for me. And the change and the intro was a little ad that I saw on a bulletin board when I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area. to join an event with a guy named Herb Goldberg, who was a psychologist at the time. He wrote one of the first, quote, men's books called The Hazards of Being Male, and looked at, you know, why, if we are so privileged, you know, are we so screwed up? That could have been the subtitle. But in any event, sure. Out of that, a number of the guys who created that invited anybody who had been there to meet at his house and form a men's group. And so the guys that started that have been meeting continuously now for 45 years. So that's been kind of the core of my own support system. It's kind of how I have grown up, in a way, had the support of men. It's why I think men's groups and men's, you know, work together is probably the most therapeutic, healing, healthful thing that you can do. And on top of that, you know, I finally got that as a therapist, you know, and having gone through two divorces, it's more than embarrassing when you're a marriage and family counselor to, you know, have to admit that you've gone through two divorces. So I finally then got some therapy. And so that's a while ago. And I continue. I have a therapist now. I see her regularly to get, you know, my head updated and my operating system tweaked again. So I really believe in, obviously, professional help when it's needed, but also the core of help, which I think of necessity, and because I think it works better than anything else, is in support of community. And communities of men, I think, are essential for males, just like my wife is in communities of women, and we have some communities that we're in together.
I was going to say, you didn't stop after those two divorces. You got married again, and have been, I mean, have had a lot of support in your long marriage as well. You've been married. You and Colin have been married how long now?
Well, Carlin will tell you that one of the reasons that we have a successful 44-year marriage, yeah, and growing is because I've been in a men's group for 45 years.
Right.
So,
right.
I have to say real quick, Sean, like,
yeah,
I appreciate what you said, Jed. It's like, there's a risk as a therapist and marriage counselor, or whatever you want to call it, of coming out and being like, look, I've failed at this twice, right? On the other hand, it's really freaking refreshing for people to see someone like you acknowledge that it's just really hard. It's all hard.
Yeah.
Right. And so that in many ways is like the peer support that I think men get from coming together and be like, oh, I'm not the only one who screwed this up. Right.
Right.
So anyway, thank you for that.
I want to highlight to the point that Jed made about the moonshot for mankind. You know, a lot of discussion going on these days about the abilities of older people. And if everybody heard, you know, Jed was born in 1943. And if you're listening to this, there's nobody I know that has more energy than Jed Diamond. And so he talks about the Moonshot of Mankind. This is an initiative that he started three years ago,
right,
I think. To look at the landscape of organizations that are working with men to make life better for men and thus for everyone else. How do we weave these folks together, these organizations, individuals and organizations together, to really have an impact? And that, in fact, everybody coming together will, you know, it's a moonshot for mankind, will help us save humanity. I don't want to leave the moonshot hanging, Jed. So if you want to give some more commentary around that,
sure.
But it's a, you know, approaching 81, you're putting a ton of energy into this initiative as well as others that we're going to talk about in a few minutes.
Yeah. Well, for most of my career, I haven't had to worry about a lot of other organizations coming together, because there just weren't very many, you know, when I started out 50 plus years ago. The only organizations for men were women's organizations that wished men would get their shit together, because women were getting liberated and they wanted, you know, competent partners to be able to join them in, you know, in health and well-being. And they didn't want men, at least most of the feminists I knew, weren't interested in making men more like women. They really wanted to have men be men. And so they're very supportive. In fact, my first involvement with, you know, even before the men's group I described, is I was at a conference, a women's conference that my first wife suggested I go to, and I was up for it. I thought, boy, if there's any place I'm going to meet some men, because it was open to men, and there were like 500 women and maybe 12 men at this gathering. And it turned out, as I started talking to the, you know, a few of the men, all those guys wanted to talk about was sports and, you know, wouldn't it be cool to have sex with this pretty one or that pretty one, which is fine. I love sports and I love pretty women, but I was looking for something else. And what the women said to me, and it was very, you know, supportive, they said, don't give up, you know, there are men out there. And that was where I actually went out, started a men's group before even the one that I'm in now. So it's part of my journey for a long time now. And what I did 3 years ago was realize that I had probably estimated that there were probably 1,000 organizations that were really doing good work. Your was one of them. I knew about your work for quite a long time, and there were others. And I said, God, men tend to be, not all men, and, you know, but we do have a tendency to be lone rangers. You know, like I grew up with that mythical Hollywood figure of, you know, go off and maybe have a sidekick, but you pretty much do it alone. And what I realized is that I saw a lot of organizations, individuals kind of doing their own thing and doing it sometimes pretty well, but realizing if we could come together, if we could pool our resources, if we could network with each other, if we could create new things together, we could really make a difference in the world. And so I invited a number of colleagues and organizations. Now we're rolling now after 3 years. We're a nonprofit. We have a website, moonshotformankind.org, and a video that describes what we're doing. And we're rolling out some new training. We want to get a whole host of resources for organizations primarily, but also individuals that really are dedicated to recognizing that men's health is not just about men's health. It inevitably is about women's health, about children's health, about community health.
Yeah, and we are, and just to say, I mean, we are Men Living, and myself personally are involved with the Moonshot and huge supporters of what Jed's vision is for this organization, and agree wholeheartedly with what the Moonshot's all about. So check it out. We're coming back to the books for a second. So one of Jed's books, I love Jed Diamond, but Jed Diamond actually is creating havoc in my household. Chris, you're looking at me like, what are you talking about? So I buy Jed's book, Male Menopause, and you know, I'm going to read it, and it's on the table, and Lisa's like, what the hell is this? What's this shit? Male menopause? Do you know what I went through? I absolutely know what you went through. How can this be done? Who is this guy? What is he writing about? How's he trying to create equivalence between what I go through? It's menopause. It's not even, it's about, you know, yes, honey. And so here's why this is really important to me is we started to create a program called The Elders, which is focused on men over 50. After reading Jed's book, which by the way was written 27 years ago, and there's so much in there that has been utilized to talk about second adulthood and the second half of your life, that, I mean, he set the stage for some other authors that have written about it. There's so much there, I think, about men understanding, and Jed, you're going to call, from my perspective, understanding their biology. What, it's not the same as women. You're going to tell the story, Jed, but we go through physical changes that affect a lot of who we are as we go forward. And so I thought it was a really nice place to start as we engage older men over 50 in this conversation. Let's start with our biology. Let's start with what's changing for us and then begin to explore how we approach our path from there. So I'm still trying to, you know, I'm still on this. I'm still trying to repair my relationship with Jed and my relationship with Lisa because of what he wrote. But Jed, pretty bold 27 years ago to write a book called Male Menopause, wouldn't you say?
Well, like, again, back to where we begin, I wrote it because, number one, I saw my wife going through menopause and what that was about. And I also saw myself going through changes, you know, as I approached, you know, midlife. And I realized, believe me, I realized there were differences, but I also realized there was something real about what I was going through and what other men were going through that was neglected, that nobody else was really addressing. And I was, as you know, I shared that when I started writing the book, I was convinced that I would have a very interesting contrast, that there'd be menopause over here and andropause or manopause or whatever we would call it over here. They'd be very different, but, you know, it would be a very interesting dialogue. Well, you go through menopause, well, we go through this, and we could. But the truth is, the more I actually did the research, and it turned out at the time, you know, there was not a lot of research in this country. Most of the actual research on the biological changes, the hormonal changes, were going on in other countries. And so the first thing I had to do to actually write the book is I had to hire a bibliographer who would find the most cutting-edge scientific articles that were often in other languages and get them translated so I could read them, because they were not in English. So by the time the book came out, it soon became an international bestseller. I've got, if you were looking up on my wall, you see some of my books on my working bookshelf. Well, up higher are the 17 foreign language translations of Male Menopause. So here's just a little thing, if you're having conflict or trying to explain this to a woman or yourself or others, that are saying, no, I mean, come on, male menopause. Ask yourself this. Do men go through puberty? Raise your hand if you believe men go through puberty. And raise your hand if you think women, females, go through puberty. Yeah. I don't think anybody would disagree that puberty is something we all go through. And I think we'd all agree that, you know, a female going through puberty is going to have some different challenges than a male going through puberty. Mm-hmm. You know, where the hair comes, you know, what parts of the anatomy. But here's the take home that's part of the work that I've been doing, part of the book, part of the class, is that the basic physiology, the basic, you know, biology does not just occur in the genitals. We call it bikini medicine, you know, that it's only in the parts that are obviously male, female, as though the rest of our bodies didn't participate. Here's another truth. There are 10 trillion cells in the human body. This is the latest, you know, biological, you know, from MIT doctors. 10 trillion cells in the human body. Every one of the cells are sex specific. That means we're talking, you know, three guys here. Every cell in your body has a set of chromosomes. You know that, you know, 23 sets. One set are called the sex chromosomes. And every one of us who are biologically male have an X and Y chromosome in every cell. And every genetic female have two X chromosomes. Well, it turns out that they don't just make penises and vaginas. they make every cell, the biology of every cell, different. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's stunning. And that's new science. I mean, we didn't know that until, you know, the recent years. And so male menopause is a critically important stage of life. It really prepares us for, you know, this long life that we all have available to us now that we didn't have for most of human history. But if we don't understand it, it's like having a roadmap that is out of date and you're trying to get somewhere, but the map is, you know, ancient. It's not accurate. And if we're going to get from one place to another, like a healthy old age and a healthy, you know, midlife, because we know midlife is getting, you know, larger. You know, Chip mm-hmm. Conley talks about it goes from 35 to 75. So if we want to have a good 35 to 75, more or less be able to get to where I am in that next phase, 75 and older, we need a good roadmap. And that's what we've created. That's what is now available to all of us to follow and to help ourselves and our families to lead the life we know we want to lead at this time of our human history and our personal histories.
I got a lot of grief from my wife and my 15-year-old a couple mornings ago when I was telling them about irritable male syndrome. I mean, they kind of laughed at the play there. And then I talked to them about the male menopause notion. I think, so male menopause was 1997. Irritable male syndrome was 2004, you know, so less than 10 years. Was the reception to that book more generous than male menopause? I'm just curious about how we've evolved as a society.
Well, it depends on who you talk to and what segment of society you talk to. Now, the truth was that when male menopause came out, at first, men didn't want to have anything to do with it. Nobody wanted to say, yeah, I go through male menopause if you're a guy.
Yeah.
Almost universally, the women that read it and, you know, and talked to me, and when I was on tour, when I toured all over the country and actually outside the country as well as it got translated into, you know, 17 foreign languages, the women as a group were saying, God, it's finally you guys have figured out that you're biological too, that you have hormones and that they change. Thank God somebody finally is talking to guys and making them realize they went through this. Now, contrast that with the irritable male syndrome. And I don't know if you've seen or have the original a hardcover copy, but it's got a very strong picture of a fist and a very powerful, and we were afraid that women would get turned off because the men loved it. Mm. You know, if you were going to have something, guys wanted irritable male syndrome, man. Yeah, I kick ass and yeah, maybe I overdo it from time to time and I need some help and yada da. But it turned out both men and women, it was much quicker received. Male menopause has stayed. It's probably gone through two or three iterations where it sold really well and then disappeared. You know, everybody forgot about it. And then all of a sudden it was in the news again. And, you know, all of a sudden sales spiked again. Male menopause was back in the news. Irritable male syndrome, you know, hit the news quick and hard and stayed basically as a bestseller for, you know, I don't know, 10 years, just straight rise. And it's, you know, peaked off a little bit, but both of those books are still, you know, very vital and people recognize their importance, but they've had a different trajectory, as you suggest.
In addition to irritability, can you explain briefly to our listeners, like, what are the other symptoms of male menopause and irritable male syndrome?
Well, part of just understanding how the books came to be. So Male Menopause came out and had a long run. and still is. And the core symptoms of male menopause, the first two symptoms, which everybody, and that's where Viagra, you know, became a household name, and all the follow-ups, was basically erectile problems, erectile dysfunction. That was the first symptom. And the second was loss of libido, loss of desire, particularly for your long-term mate or the person you're with, and a desire for everybody that was younger. So those were the basic symptoms. Now, where irritable male syndrome came to be was a lot of people who had read Male Menopause, and it's mostly for men 40 and over, but a number of young men were saying, you know, I think I may be going through something like that. Mm-hmm. And what we found in the third symptom of male menopause that nobody had been writing about at the time, nobody created a drug for it, but the third most common symptom of male menopause was irritability and anger. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of younger people went, hey, you know, I'm not over 40, but I'm having some of that. So we realized that irritable male syndrome was a different thing. It's not, they're not the same, although some people have put them together because they have some similarities. But irritable male syndrome has a whole list of other symptoms. There's, you know, there's a whole questionnaire that I send to people that's got symptoms for male menopause, symptoms for irritable male syndrome, and then what you can do to help that. So they are different. And the core of the irritable male syndrome is obviously irritability, but also, you know, a sense of anxiety and worry. Mm-hmm. Also a loss of our feeling of well-being. That's where the depression, you know, comes in, a lowering of serotonin. So there are different symptoms, but once you understand them, a whole lot of people start going, yeah, that's my husband, that's me. And yeah, he's not just an angry bastard who, you know, is just out to hurt us. He's got something that can be treated, can be dealt with. And when you do, when you get your hormones in line, when you get your emotions guided, when you get the connections to how you're feeling, then life gets a lot better for the man and his relationship and his family.
Mm. Have you found that men going through these hormonal shifts revert back to some of those basic instincts, like the ones we talked about earlier, the more introverted instincts, the being less inclined to ask for directions or ask for help?
Well, one of the things that a healthy level of hormones does, we think of testosterone as a steroid, and people that have abused, you know, anabolic steroids for, you know, mm-hmm. for weightlifting or, you know, to be strong football players or athletes. And you think of, they call it roid rage, you know, for mm-hmm. those that are using too much of a steroid. Well, it turns out irritable male syndrome, the core of the problem is not too much testosterone or too much hormone, but too little. And that was the stunning thing that they found, was that the irritability was coming because of a low testosterone. Mm-hmm. And low testosterone, some of it was because of aging, some of it was because of putting on weight around the belly. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't mm-hmm. think that would, you know, but here's what happens when you put on weight, particularly around the belly, is that some of our natural testosterone gets converted to estrogen. And that then takes away from a lot of the, you know, the very healthy, you know, direction and calmness. When you really are full of healthy testosterone, you don't feel rageful. You feel sexy. You feel together. You feel your mind functions well. So if you're losing that, you have all kinds of symptoms that are not comfortable and are not healthy for your body, mind, and spirit.
Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting question to, you know, as we think about in all the work that you've done, Jed, and we do Men Living, and the idea that one of the objectives is for men to be more open and, to Chris's point, ask for help and be more emotional and more engaging with the world, kind of unlearn some of the conditioning that we've had as young men, that when we talk about these things, we talk about, well, you know, we bring attention to irritability and the changes in our body, and people are like, well, now it's just men bitching. And to a certain extent, I mean, it's just like, okay, well, you're men. I mean, it's just, you know, deal with it, because you're, you know, there's a faction or there's groups of people mm-hmm. that take that line. So we're trying to break out in a way that is more fulfilling. And then there's the other that tries to keep the status quo, I think. And I don't know. Do you have thoughts about that?
Well, there seem to be kind of two kind of separate understandings that are not accurate. One is that if you get your hormones in line, you get your biology in line, then that's going to make you, you know, the angry male that's the macho, you know, goes around kicking ass and hurting people. The truth is just the opposite, you know, as you know, when we are healthy in body, mind, and spirit, we are full dimensional males, which means, you know, we can be aggressive when that's necessary, when we need to defend our home, our territory, and do it in a responsible way. It also means that we are fully loving, fully intimate, fully caring, fully nurturing. And the other kind of thing that is not accurate is that if we, you know, get men to be more feeling, more sensitive, more, you know, more aware, that we're really feminizing them, or you're making them more like females instead of males. Mm-hmm. And what you know, and what I know, and what my, you know, my sons and my grandson, you know, the males that I interact with, my clients know, my own, is that becoming a whole man, a full male, is something that is always been part of our heritage. It's something we've lost connections with. You know, in my book, 12 Rules for Good Men, we talk about the why we've lost what we've lost and how to reclaim the things that make us most male, that also make us good fathers, make us good husbands, make us good neighbors, make us good, hopefully, leaders. That's part of, you know, my larger work in the world is to create good leaders at all level in our homes, our communities. And it would be nice if we could do that with our national leadership as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Jed, I'm working with Jed, and Living is working with Jed to create a program for our elders initiative. And, you know, this program is going to be based on the male menopause and really a lot of Jed's work and research. But what we're also doing is we're building a program called The Bridge. And that program is focused on college-aged seniors. And we're working with the Eisner Foundation to kind of blend those. So to bring the older men together with the younger men in a generational connection. And I'm just curious, Jed, about, you know, your perspective and your message for younger men today and what you think. Do they have any special challenges that we haven't gone through as you see it? Are things brighter for them? Going to be more challenging? What do you think for the younger guys?
Well, you know, I have a lot of younger guys in my family. So, you know, I live it day to day. I have lots of friends and I, you know, the work that I do. So if I had to summarize it, I would say that things are better than they were for us. There are more choices. There are more options. This notion of the man box that many of us grew up with fairly rigid views of what it meant to be a man. Now we have a lot more freedom, but we also have a lot more confusion, because with the freedom is this feeling of, well, Yeah, I could be anybody, and I could even be anybody. Now there's, with all the gender fluidity, there's almost the feeling like gender doesn't matter or sex doesn't matter. I could just choose. If I want to be female, I can be female if I want. If I want to be male. And so there's a lot of sense of who am I, you know, as a male. There is a lot of feeling of rootlessness, and that's why the suicide rate is going up for young males and females. They have some similar rootlessness issues. But part of the gift and part of what you are doing is connecting healthy generational male, healthy men that are elders, because the young men forever, this is part of our evolutionary history, could not become men without being initiated and guided by the community of elder males. So we need healthy elder males. The other side of that is elder males need young men in order to feel that you're fulfilling your destiny. Mm-hmm. You know, young men are starving for guidance and support. Older men are feeling irrelevant, you know, and mothers and grandmothers are spending lots of time with intergenerational. Older men feel cut off, irrelevant, lonely, and that's why there's such a high suicide rate. So the idea of bringing together the elder males, the midlife and older men, along with younger men who are just, in a sense, getting started in life, the college, you know, this is the kind of dream connections that we need. We need hundreds of, we need thousands yeah. of, you know, and it's part of my excitement in working with you guys on this is not just to help the midlife men, but to realize that part of how we do that is to be able to have the connections with younger people, younger men in this instance.
Mm-hmm. How do we reach more of the, how do we expand the scale of that? So it's not just dozens of these connections, and instead it's the thousands and maybe tens of thousands that we think would be really impactful. Is it a tech play?
Well, I think part of it is a shift in mindset. That, again, go back to the Lone Ranger. I think since I've been doing this work, you know, for more than 50 years, I can't tell you how many first annual somethings, the first annual men's international conference there's been. So part of it is realizing that this takes time. Yeah. You know, you're not going to be able to do this. And many organizations, you know, want the quick fix. You know, we all do. We'd like it to be successful and we'd like to roll it out. So part of it is a mindset that says you got to be in it for the long run. You can't just do it and hope it's going to catch on and catch fire immediately. Mm-hmm. So that's one. The second is that with technology, we now have an opportunity that we've never had before to be able, just what we're doing, to be able to not be in the same physical location, because the number of people you can impact, if you can, you know, do some of it, and I think you need both, you know, high tech, high touch, that mm-hmm. concept. So we need ways that we can connect face to face. We need to touch each other. We need to smell each other. We need to, you know, feel each other. But we also can do, and I wasn't convinced when I started this, that you could really have meaningful interchanges, you know, via technology. Yeah. And technology is getting better at it. You know, eventually they'll figure out how to change the little light we have to look in when we're looking at a camera and be able to put it between the eyes of the people we're talking to rather than at the top sure. of the screen. And we could, you know, have more friendly ways of doing it so that the technology can work for us. But it's happening. The moonshot is part of what's happening. You know, the outreach from men living to be able to not only do it in a local area, but to be able to have connections that go beyond a particular physical area.
Yeah, Chris, I would say, I mean, I evaluate my level of patience on this regularly. I mean, I would say my inner exchange with Jed are very helpful from the standpoint of, you know, thinking about the fact that it takes time. And I think about doing, you know, in my head, it's like, okay, pick and shovel work. I mean, you know, one connection, one man, day after day after day after day, and starts to build on itself. You know, technologically, yeah. I mean, I think the Zoom technology that we're on is allows us to shorten distances and get to more men. I mean, everybody knows that's listened to this or read what I've written. I'm not a fan of social media. I think that's, you know, net more decisive than it does bring us together. And I think societally, I think about all the areas of impact that have to be modified or evolved to make this right. I mean, you know, the educational system and how that really supports enlightened humanity, if you will. I mean, it really kind of continues to support kind of the division, I think, between historically what men are supposed to be, historically what or boys and girls, and, you know, issues of curiosity in school as well. So I just think there's a lot, there's so much. Yeah. That, at least for me, you can tell the way I'm rambling gets caught up in my head to say one thing at a time, one program at a time.
Jed, what have we not covered that you wanted to cover? Or what do you think the listeners should hear?
Well, I think one thing that we really haven't covered, and it's relevant to this last topic and in some way to all the topics, is that I believe, and I think we don't need to be scientists about this to realize that, you know, the world is in trouble. The world of humanity is in trouble. Our systems are collapsing. Our ability to be able to problem solve is become alienated. We're in conflict with each other on so many things, the left and the right and males and females. And I think part of the reality is that when humanity is frightened, and I don't think there's ever been a time when humanity as a whole is more connected, so we know what's going on in other parts of the world. That's what technology enables us to do. And what we see and feel, even beyond our cognitive understanding, is we feel things are collapsing in some ways. And the result of that is that two things is that there is a deep tendency that you will see below the surface of people that just have given up. They're just have an attitude of humanity's screwed. You know, we just got to get what we can get, every man for himself, so to speak, and just eat, drink, and be merry because we're going to all die anyway, quick. That mentality, of course, it's not long range because it's, you know, it's short. And it also doesn't create positive things. So that as a result is what we are creating is in an atmosphere. It's kind of like, you know, creating a sandcastle at the beach. And as soon as you start getting it nice, the wave comes in and wipes it out and you got to start all over again. So I think the mentality has to be creating islands of sanity where we can insulate ourselves, we can protect ourselves while we're building. Because if we don't, you have key people who get overwhelmed, overstressed, and wiped out. They get sick, your key people die, or they get sick and can't work today. Or your program that you spent so much time planning, all of a sudden it's connected to a supply chain. I mean, just what's happening immediately in the world today with systems going down all over the world, and all of a sudden big parts of airlines can't fly. Well, that's just the beginning. This is going to happen more and more. So the thing that I would, you know, kind of add in that we haven't talked about is we need to understand that reality and be able to build things that take into account the system breakdown and how we can protect what we're building so that it can build long enough to then make a difference. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I love that. I wish that you were able to bottle your tirelessness and your energy so that I could buy some of that. It seems like you're not slowing down at all. Like, what's your secret?
Well, I'll tell you the secret. It's a very simple secret. It's not an easy one, but it means taking care of yourself in ways that men are not very adept. And I have a lot of friends that are dying too soon. You know, my goal is to live long enough. I can take care of my family. I can take care of others. And so that what that means is, in addition to all the things that I do, you know, I have a little home spa that I use every day that includes, you know, tubs and fragrances. I get a massage every week or every other week. I walk every day. I take myself out to dinner like I did last night while my wife, you know, had her women's group. I have friends that I get together with because I know the importance of connections. So I recognize that in the same way that stress is going up in the world, if I don't up my level of self-care, you know, I'm not going to be able to be around. And you got to not just be around, be a, you know, a codger that's just getting by, and mostly you're falling apart and you're going to doctors and you have, you know, this and that problem. I want to be healthy and energetic, you know, for the next 20 years. And I intend to be, you know, I'm only, you know, 80. And for me, that's just getting started.
Hell yeah.
I think you told me one time, you said, I have at least 20 good years left.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, here we go. Let's go. Let's go.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's so simple, but so wise, like that whole, you know, self-care that you just described. Jed, we only have a few minutes left. I know Sean's got to run here before long. Do you have like four more minutes so that we can ask you three questions?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. The first question we ask this of all our guests, what do you wish you could have told your 10-year-old self?
Well, pretty much what I've just said. I would want my 10-year-old self to take better care of himself, not realize he had to do it all himself. So take care of yourself, ask for help more, realize that you're part of a team, even when you feel like the Lone Ranger. That's what I'd tell my 10-year-old self.
That's good advice. Good thing to remind myself of too, probably throughout life. The second question is, do you have a mantra in life or a mantra these days?
A mantra, not a phrase in the sense that I repeat over and over again. As Sean knows, I have different little phrases like I use in the class that are quotes, that are ones that I, you know, that I realize have wisdom in them that we unpack. So I have a number of them. If you were in my office, you'd see some of them. So I don't have a one, but what the general thing is that I believe there is short little, you know, packets of wisdom that are appropriate. Just like I do things every day for myself, I will unpack a little wisdom, you know, kernel of, you know, that Jung said or some hero of mine, and not just read and say, oh, that's nice. I live with it all day. I go through my mind as you think of as a mantra. So I have various ones. That's my answer to that. And they're each one, you know, I pull out for each day because each day is a little different.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I love that answer. The last question is, what do you hope that people will say about you at your wake?
At my wake? Well, that he played well with others. Real simple. I mean, because that's, if I unpack that, what it means is, you know, that my kids would feel that not only was I a good father, but that we played well together. And there was a source of joy in our lives, and my friends would feel that, and I feel that. I love to play. I'm a 80-year-old kid because I've been a kid at many times in my life. So that's what I would hope in some form people would say in their own words.
Well, I'm lucky I got to play with Jed all the time. So Jed, thanks for coming to join us today and sharing your wisdom. There's a lot more, and I would just tell people that I send out an email every Wednesday, and you go to menliving.org and sign up for the newsletter. Jed is always there. We always highlight his latest blog post, and you can continue to get his wisdom, and we'll have links to all Jed's stuff in the notes as well. I encourage you to check out.
Yeah,
check
come out come play. Yeah, come play with definitely. Me. I've got plenty of room. And my playpen in my backyard here to play together. So
bring,
come join me.
Bring your red heads if you're coming. The younger people under 40 are saying, "Well, keds, what are you talking about?
What do you know that word means?"
Yeah.
And maybe we'll come back together and check in again, the three of us, when this programming that's being funded by Eisner gets further down the road.
That'd be great. Yeah, I think that would be a good thing to do. For sure. Yeah.
Jed, thank you so much.
Jed,
my
talk
pleasure.
To you soon. Peace.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Chris. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of If You've Come This Far.
And this is Sean. Remember to check us out at menliving.org.